Hello everyone, welcome to the September 2015 edition of the Catherine Swatridge Hypnotherapy Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Adam Dixon. Adam is the author of several fiction and non-fiction books, and Adam's here today to tell us all about his latest book, Surfing the Edge, A Survivor's Guide to Bipolar Disorder. So welcome Adam, it's lovely to have you here today. And perhaps you could just give us a little bit of context and explain a bit about Surfing the Edge.
Yes, it's nice to be here, Kat. Thanks very much for inviting me. Surfing the Edge came about from conversations that I had with a friend of mine, Alistair, who is also bipolar. And we shared a lot of similar experiences. and it was quite interesting because we actually went through similar experiences over the years, sort of leading up to the conversations that we had that eventually became the book. So from those general chats that we had, one of us, I can't remember who it was, suggested actually putting a book together from them. So that's really how that came about. And this is going back probably 3 years or so, possibly more now. So that's what I did. I started to tape conversations between us, and that became the early draft of the book. And since then it's gone through a lot of drafts after that, as books tend to do. And I then put the book to my writers group, who then critiqued it, and that came up with some very interesting suggestions from them, one of which I took up, which was to involve get a female perspective on bipolar disorder, which I then did by going to, it sort of came about accidentally. I went to Portsmouth Literary Festival and met Faye, who, strange enough, was bipolar, which came out from a conversation that we were having. So she agreed to help with the book, and I met her in Portsmouth. Again, taped a series of conversations with her, which were then edited into the book.
Fantastic. So it sounds like the book itself is very much based on real conversations with real people. So what's your own personal experience of bipolar disorder?
Right. My own personal experience with bipolar disorder goes back. The first time I was diagnosed was in 1992, but the illness itself could be traced back earlier than that. When I look at my earliest experiences with clinical depression, around the age of probably 13 or 14, which is covered in the book, and that was a really difficult time for me. And I then understood that it was in on my mother's side of the family. But the diagnosis of bipolar disorder came about when I was probably around 30 or so. And it's basically manifests in extremes of mood, extreme mood swings. So if you imagine you're, perhaps when you're feeling a bit depressed, you feel low, you don't have much energy, or conversely, if you're feeling in a great mood, you're feeling full of energy, you want to go out and socialize. Well, bipolar is the extreme end of those spectrums. So the depressions that I suffered were just about the blackest place that you can go to, where you contemplate suicide. There just seems to be no way out. But the mania for me is fascinating because for instance, actors, very good actors, the method actors, they will immerse themselves in a character, and they will draw that character out, and use their imagination to try and become that character. Whereas in bipolar, you don't need to act. You believe the delusions that are going on in your mind, even when members of your family, people like that, are saying to you, you're not well, you're delusional, but you don't believe this. And the flights, that you go to are quite incredible. And what is also interesting is that most of these experiences are shared by people with bipolar. I've read countless episodes where people believe they might be famous actors or rock stars, which was one of my favourites. I used to walk around in a leather waistcoat, and I'd grown my hair and had these earrings and things like that. And but as I said, the extreme end is delusional, and also it manifests in other ways where you become extremely irritable. Your mind is moving at such a speed that people can't keep up with it. For instance, I wouldn't be able to sit in this room talking to you. I'd be up pacing, and you feel constricted wherever you are. So, and it is a devastating illness because of things like your spending habits. You know, you believe that you have an unlimited amount of money that you've got access to, and the frustrating thing is you can't get your hands on it. So I would do things like take credit cards out, bank loans, building society loans, and this was at a time when it was fairly easy to get them. You know, if you had property you could secure against the loan, you would often get the loan. So I ended up with a lot of money owing to building societies and banks and things like that. So yes, it's an extremely severe illness.
Thank you very much, Adam, for explaining that so in so much detail. So after your bipolar disorder was diagnosed, how was it then treated?
Right. Well, eventually my bipolar disorder became so severe that I was sectioned under the Mental Health Act. And this was an extremely traumatic time for me, because it was actually something that I had feared ever since I was quite young, when I recognised these mood swings in me. So it was almost like a kind of omen, I suppose. It really felt like that, and that I'd finally reached this stage where that was it. I was finally going to be sectioned, and that's what happened. I was taken to the hospital, and I can recall it clearly as my mum came with me. And I was treated with a variety of different medications, antipsychotics, the medications they use to bring the mood down. And then you'll be seen by a doctor who will then look at medication to stabilize the mood. So there are lots of different medications, a lot of which we talk about in the book, and which it was interesting to see our different experiences, or how some of the medications that myself, Faye and Alistair had been on. But I was eventually prescribed lithium, which is possibly the foremost treatment for people with bipolar. And I didn't want to take it, because being a creative person, I'd read a lot about lithium, that it actually dampens the creativity. So I was very concerned about that. But I think possibly what also, well, not possibly, I know what also interfered with many years of me actually being stable on any medication was the fact that I was drinking and taking drugs sporadically. So all of those things, especially for somebody with mental illness, they directly affect the mind, probably in ways that they don't with other people. So I went through many years of cycles of that. And of course, medication doesn't work when you're pursuing those sort of habits. So I can't really say that. I would probably say for 10 years or so, I really struggled to maintain myself and maintain the bipolar, probably because of the other habits that I had, the lifestyle choices that I made. And I think that's really important, and it's a common feature with people that suffer from bipolar, is that sort of resistance to changing habits. And there's also the fact that mania can be, as Alistair points out in the book, it can be quite addictive, in that you go to such heights that you don't even really need a drug or anything to elevate you to those heights. You know, that the mind will go there sort of almost naturally. So there is a resistance to medication in that respect. So for me, it was a case of finally reaching the stage where I was willing to change those habits in order to stay well. And that's what I have to do to this day.
Thank you. And I think that's very common, actually, among many people with mental health illnesses, is that tendency sometimes towards drugs and alcohol. And I guess it's you're never quite sure which exacerbates which situation. So following on from that, first of all, how did you then manage to stabilize yourself and, you know, lead a happy, normal life? And also, what led you to write the Surfing the Edge?
Right. I'll try and take those questions one by one. The normal happy life, I like that. Yeah, that's a nice ideal. I think, as I said, after a sort of, longer really, as we're going right back to my teens, when I was heavy drinking was part of the culture that I was in, drug taking, I sort of went into that on the, perhaps on the outer edges, but I it just became a part of my lifestyle. So around about 10 years or so ago, I made the decision to that I was going to change my lifestyle, and that meant completely overhauling a lot of the things and the habits that have led up to me being hospitalized. So I got rid of I stopped drinking, I stopped taking any drugs of any kind, unless it was the medication that I was on. And I was able to see that then, by taking the lithium, which I still take now, that was allowing the lithium to work. So I had regular tests, and that kept me stabilized. So it was really through experience and finding out those triggers. I like that word trigger, because that people can recognize that and understand it. And I think we all have certain triggers. And so with me, I've always been a highly sensitive right from a child. And so I carry that sensitivity with me, which is good for my writing and things like that. But I had to recognize that there's certain areas or certain things I have to avoid. So it's really a case of, for instance, making sure I get enough sleep. That's something that can trigger not only depression, but can also trigger the elevated mind, which sort of tends towards the mania and the bipolar. So diet, you know, all the things that people would do to keep themselves healthy normally, that anybody else would do, those are the things that I really focus on. And and also trying to generate a more positive outlook on life, because I mean, I've done a lot of reading over the positive sort of positive thinking over the years, and I've come to believe that it does have a huge impact on the way that we think. And cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, is used a lot in the treatment of bipolar disorder and many other mental illnesses. So I think that the message, if anything, would be that by changing a lot of things, both in lifestyle changes and the way you think, that can contribute towards a more balanced way. Now, what I don't want to do is try and create the impression that put a few things in place and that's it, your bipolar will be cured and everything else. I'm just talking from my own personal experience as to how I try to maintain what can be a very problematic illness.
Thank you very much, Adam. That was very honest and very helpful for the listeners. So So what led you to write Surfing the Edge?
Well, I've always written ever since I was, ever since I was at school, as far back as I can remember. So I had various writing projects going on, and I think by then I'd written 3 sport books which had been published, and 2 novels. And Surfing the Edge was another project that, as I said, came about from a series of conversations with Alistair, which then developed with me involving Faye, or who agreed to become involved. And so it went through various drafts, and I was then introduced to Chris Kelly, who is a mental health lecturer and practitioner, who was at Bournemouth University, and he became involved. So I met up with him, and from a series of conversations with him, I asked if he would like to give a professional perspective on each of the chapters that we'd written. And the book is written chronologically, so we go from childhood through to adolescence, and then we take all the different issues that are that impact bipolar. So there's a chapter about sex, drugs and alcohol, through to treatment, the family, all of those things. So Chris got involved, and he would then send me drafts and comments on the chapters, and that it sort of evolved and went through draft after draft, as books tend to do. That's the boring side of it. And we're now coming to the final stages, where we're looking to publish in October. So it's an exciting time, and it's been the result of a lot of hard work. But what I would say about Chris is his continuing encouragement and sympathy from a practitioner's point of view. And he always says how he finds our honesty is extremely is invaluable. And he, as I said, he's always been extremely sympathetic about the book. So my son Alex, who's a graphic designer and an artist, who's designed 2 of the covers for my novels and won an award for one of them, he's currently designing the cover for the book, which I'm extremely excited about seeing. So so all of it positive, and I really hope that readers will get something from the book, in as much as insight into the illness, and also perhaps some, I don't like the word advice, but perhaps some information on how it can be managed through the combination of medication, the support networks, lifestyle changes, that kind of thing, that have worked for myself and Alistair and Faye.
Thank you very much. And as Adam just said, the book will be out in October, and just below the this link, you'll see information about how to find out more about Adam, and also how you can buy the book, and also some details about Alex's graphic design work. Being an author is a very enviable job, I think, for a lot of people. What advice would you give to people who would like to become authors?
My advice to people who want to become authors would be to basically start writing. You hear a lot of people saying, I've always wanted to write a book, but there is only really one answer to that, and that is to start writing it. It is a long and torturous occupation, but actually writers moan about the hard work involved, but I think I enjoy the process, and what I enjoy most of all, I suppose, is the end product, which usually is after countless rewrites and edits and proofreading, copy editing and things like that, that goes into the making of a book. So for anybody who's interested in writing, I think you just sit down and do it. You know, there's lots of writing schools and things like that, writers groups. But ultimately, it is something that works in isolation, and it suits some people, and it doesn't suit others. It seems to suit me.
Adam, how do you think attitudes to mental health illnesses have changed over the years, perhaps since you were diagnosed, and maybe specifically attitudes to bipolar disorder?
That's a really good question, and it's one that we've discussed quite a lot amongst ourselves during the writing of the book. I think as early as I can remember, when I was growing up, sort of 12, 13, mental illness certainly wasn't a subject that was addressed at all, if ever it may be come up in a newspaper report about somebody. But generally, I think it was one of those subjects that people really didn't want to talk about. So I think now there is much more awareness about mental illness and bipolar in particular. Although bipolar disorder has sort of got an almost, it's almost become trendy perhaps in some circles, where there's celebrities come out and say they're bipolar. So there's that sort of connotation between mental illness and some aspects of stardom, I suppose, if you like, but the realities of the illness are extremely severe. The purpose of this podcast is to educate people, and I think the more that we can do that, and the purpose of this book, and I must mention National Bipolar Awareness Day, which is on the 6th of October. I recently spoke to Richard at the National Bipolar Awareness about Surfing the Edge, and that we're trying to publish that around about the same time as National Bipolar Awareness Day. So it's things like that are going to educate people and inform them, and hopefully take some of that stigma away. We've called the book Surfing the Edge, Survivor's Guide to Bipolar Disorder, as we all feel that we have certainly survived a traumatic period of our lives, and are trying to maintain it as well as we can. But I don't let my past affect anything I do in the future. I think that, as Faye points out in the, forgot to mention the video that we did, she points out that she went on an awareness course, and everybody on that course were dynamic and ambitious, creative people. So I think anybody with a mental illness, as I did for years, felt that I couldn't break out, I couldn't achieve anything. I've since come to realize that it's an aspect of me that informs my creativity, and that I just have to look after it and do certain things to make sure that I don't go to those extremes.
You've written a wide range of books, actually. How can readers and listeners find out a bit more about your other work?
Readers can find out about my work by going onto my website, which is www.adamdixon.co.uk. I always have to spell out the surname because people get it wrong. It's Dickson rather than the other more common spelling. I also have an author page on Facebook, which you can find by going on Adam Dickson Author Facebook. And my books are on Amazon, which you can find, various other sort of websites. So yes, I think if you're interested, and if you're interested in hearing about my work or any of the projects I'm involved with, do email me.
Lovely. And all those contact details and Adam's other books will be listed just below this. Thank you very much, Adam. It's been an absolute pleasure interviewing you today. So we'll hopefully see you again soon.
Thank you very much. And yes, thanks very much for the interview.